You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast for Friday, May 22nd, 2020. I'm your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com, and our episode today is brought to you by Built Bar. Get $10 off your first order at BuiltBar.com by using promo code Locked On.
Joining us today is my friend Dan Burnham. Dan hosts the This Is the Jet Life podcast. Dan, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me, John. I appreciate it.
And you should definitely listen to Dan's show. It's a tremendous podcast. He produces it actually on my website, gangrenenation.com. So, Dan, let's talk a little bit about the Jets offseason. And what's your favorite move the team's made so far? And I'll tell you mine after this.
Yeah, I think starting the obvious one is the offensive line, and the number one, the big centerpiece, Connor McGovern. We've had some real issues at center for the past few years after having it be shored up for almost 20 years. And for once, Joe Douglas has addressed the position of need the most, which is the offensive line, and gotten a guy to a pretty fair contract, got him under for 3 years, and looks like a good anchor piece moving forward.
I agree with you, Dan, and I guess maybe I'd say Mekhi Becton, just because I love the fact that Jets drafted somebody on the offensive line. But yeah, Connor McGovern was just, I think it's such an important signing because, as you mentioned, the center position has really killed this team for years. And you go through close to two decades, where you have either Kevin Mawai or Nick Mangold, you know, guys who were arguably the best center in football. And we had the Wesley Johnson experience in 2017 and the Spencer Long experience in 2018. And look, I have to admit, I was a fan of the Spencer Long signing at the time. I mean, I'm embarrassed to say it now. And then last year, I mean, they tried with Ryan Khalil. I can't really blame them for trying, because at the time it was really the most viable option, but it's just going to be good to see some quality center play again for this team.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, like you said, Kevin Mawai, Nick Mangold, and then from what we had, I was excited about Spencer Long too, because it felt like they were making a move, but this McGovern signing, he is by far the biggest one to add to that. And I'm with you as well with Mekhi Becton in the draft. When he went for that position, you know, there was definitely some speculation going in if we'd go a skill position player like a wide receiver, but when he took Mekhi Becton, I think you know, it's easy to kind of agree and see where he's going with that. It looks like a good move moving forward.
Absolutely. So now let's bring some pessimism into this show, which I hate to do, but what was your least favorite move the Jets made this offseason?
My least favorite move probably so far has been the lack of bringing in a backup quarterback. I think that obviously, Sam Darnold is the guy, and I've loved rooting for him. He's a quarterback that I want to be the franchise quarterback for the next 10 years, if possible. But for his first two seasons, we have had to rely on a backup for three games or, you know, right around that each year. And last year, Trevor Siemian seemed like a guy that could be potentially a good backup. He goes down right away. We ended up with Luke Falk. It was just a real mess and derailed the whole season. We end up with 7 wins, and who knows, had we been able to win a few games with Luke Falk in there early on, it's possible the team could have made a little bit more of a playoff push. Either way, I just wanted to see a guy that if Sam does go down, we'd have a guy there that could come in and maybe spot start 1-2 wins. And aside from that, just being somebody that he could learn from, grow off of, kind of like a Josh McCown like we had in the past. I was really looking at a guy like Matt Moore maybe to bring in for him to learn under. And, you know, they bring back David Fales, who just seems to be Adam Gase's clipboard. And then they draft James Morgan, who's kind of like a developmental project. And, you know, it's just, you hope that you're not going to be in the same position we were in weeks, you know, 2-5 last year.
Oh, man. You know, I was going to give a different answer. I actually like your answer better, though. That's a really good one, backup quarterback. See, mine, and a lot of people disagree with me, and maybe you disagree with me, Dan. I think the Jets like Alex Lewis too much. And, like, not that I have a big issue bringing him back, but to me, he's the kind of guy who maybe he competes for a starting job. Maybe he's a backup. And the money they gave him just tells me that I think he's going to be the starting left guard. They're kind of set on him as a starter. And he's the kind of guy where I feel like if he's your fifth best offensive lineman and you have a lot of great linemen, you'll be okay, just like the Baltimore lines were with him in there. Like, he wasn't bad enough that he dragged them down. But that was the one of the moves that kind of stuck out to me, is just maybe they value him a little too much. That's my view. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm a little bit, you know, I don't mind him coming as a backup guy. It just feels like, you know, McGovern's a great piece. Becton moving forward, it feels like there's a lot of coin flips in there. And Alex Lewis is one of those guys that, you know, if he has a solid year, like you said, he could be one of the weaker guys on the line. It does feel like he's going to be pushed into a role to start. And that is one of those guys that you could see improving first. When you look at the offensive line, what we have right now, he does seem like the lower end of that. And hopefully he's not going to be starting for, you know, too many games this year, but we've got this Brian Winters, Greg Van Roten, and Lewis experiment going on. So we'll see who ends up sticking and who ends up being a backup or cut.
Now, I think everybody's got a position on what the Jets did in free agency at the wide receiver position, letting Robbie Anderson go to Carolina, bringing in Breshad Perriman. Where did you fall on all of that?
I liked Robbie Anderson. I didn't think that he was demanding too much money. I think that I definitely would have preferred Robbie Anderson over Breshad Perriman. I watched Breshad Perriman for a while. I'm not a huge fan of him. I think that he's a guy that can run well for a long ball, has trouble catching the long ball. It's one thing that Robbie excelled at, was the strong hands way down the field. And, you know, it's one of those things that for Sam Darnold, I think that what's going to help him the most will be more of a larger, big target guy that he can throw it to. And it wasn't really Robbie Anderson, but I don't think it's Breshad Perriman either. So on a one-year deal, you can't really blame him, as a speed threat is definitely something you want to have in an NFL offense. But I don't think that he's going to be that, you know, arguably number one receiver that potentially we were hoping Robbie Anderson was going to evolve into. What do you think?
My views were kind of mixed on it, because I probably wasn't as high on Robbie as a lot of people, but I thought he was a certainly a capable receiver. I like the fact he was developing chemistry with Darnold over the 2 years. And to be honest with you, I'm surprised that he did not get more money. If you had told me around $10 million, I would have figured the Jets would have kept him. And I'm not a huge Perriman fan, to be honest with you. I'd never trust a guy who like has the one big month right before he's about to hit free agency. But I get why they did it. And I can't say that the Perriman deal was a bad one. It's a pretty low risk move for a guy with a lot of physical talent who could potentially produce for this team. And I kind of feel like, and this is something I've said, the way the Jets handled it suggests to me that they kind of view the two guys as interchangeable. So we'll find out whether they're right or not. I guess the best way I'd put it is, I think it's a defensible move. It's not personally the move I would have made, though, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Robbie was kind of a fan favorite, and it's not a huge contract that we're going to be locked into this guy for forever. So it's not the end of the world either way. But, you know, I'm definitely with you on that.
Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. It comes in 16 amazing flavors, 8 of which are chocolate and nut, and 8 of which are chocolate and nut-free. Bars are covered in 100% chocolate, and they're soft and easy to chew. Bars are low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, and high-fiber. Peanut Butter Brownie has 20 grams protein, 170 calories, 3 grams sugar, 3 grams net carbs, while Mint Brownie has 15 grams protein, 110 calories, 4 grams sugar, 5 grams net carbs. If you go to BuiltBar.com and enter promo code LOCKEDON, you get $10 off your first order. Again, promo code LOCKEDON, one word, LOCKEDON, at BuiltBar, BuiltBar.com, for $10 off your first order.
Now let's talk about the other receiver the Jets brought in, and this is a move that has gotten pretty much nothing but positive reviews, and you're a fan of the Denzel Mims pick in the second round, aren't you?
Of course, yeah. I mean, he's a guy that I never dreamed would be available when we picked at 48 originally. And he was potentially a first-round talent, I thought, going in. And there's a lot to like in his game. He is that sort of prototypical big 6'3", kind of tough receiver, good red zone target, something that we've really missed with the New York Jets for a long time. And when he's available at 48, I'm like, you got to take him. Mims is the guy. I think a lot of us were in agreement there. And then when they trade back, just like, oh, shoot, we're going back down this road of, I don't know, trading back to draft another third string tight end like McCagnan would do. Then Denzel Mims is still there at 59. And that's like, you know, when he picked him, it was a great moment. I think that he's going to be great for this team. And I think you talk about it all the time on this podcast, is that you can't expect much from a rookie year one. He probably will be thrown into the fire a little bit sooner than, you know, you would like for a rookie wide receiver. But I think that he's got good games ahead. And I think that with Sam Darnold, him getting chemistry, it's going to be a really nice pairing for the Jets.
Yeah, I remember the morning of that second round, or it was either the night after the first round ended, or it was the morning of the second round. I was on the phone with my father, and he asked me, what are the Jets going to do? And I said something like, I said, they're probably going to take a receiver in the second round. And he goes, okay, who's the best receiver available? And I said, well, the best receiver who's going to be available is, and I thought I was totally wrong, I thought it was Michael Pittman, who went very early in the second round. But I said, the best receiver who's actually still on the board is Denzel Mims, but there's no way he's going to be there at 48. And not only was there at 48, he was there at 59 after the Jets traded down.
Yeah, and it's actually funny because I was talking to my dad as the draft is going on, and he's freaking out at 48. He wants Mims. He was a huge fan of Mims as like a first-round guy. And then as Mims starts falling, he actually starts becoming hesitant, being like, wait a minute, why doesn't anybody want him? What's spoiled goods or something? And by the time the Jets were on the clock, he was maybe turning his tune around, saying that there's got to be something up, you know, kind of like, you know, your thoughts on what could be the issue with Larry Warford. Maybe there's something hidden that we don't know about. And I thought that was pretty funny. We did end up getting the guy he wanted, so how can you be upset?
Right, that's exactly what I was thinking as the second round's going on. I'm like, why is Mims falling? Like, why is he falling past Van Jefferson? Why is he falling past KJ Hamler? And then they just take it, and I don't care anymore. I'm just like, okay, I'm good with that. That's kind of the same way I felt about Bryce Hall, because I thought Bryce Hall was a guy who was probably going like round two, round three, and the Jets get him all the way in round five.
Yep, he was another one that I really had pegged for round three as well. Thought he'd be great for the Greg Williams defense, and to get him at five, it felt like Joe Douglas kind of wanted what a lot of Jets fans wanted, but also didn't jump too early, waited, was patient, and let the board come to him, and it was very refreshing.
No, I agree. And, you know, people say, well, he got lucky because Denzel Mims could have been taken between 48 and 59. And they say, well, that's true. But what that also tells me is that maybe Joe Douglas felt that there were guys who were equal to Denzel Mims who were still going to be available at 59. That, you know, as fans, like we have this tunnel vision. There are the guys we want, and they're the only guys we could possibly get. There are lots of good players available, though, when the Jets are on the clock. And just because like we want one specific player, that doesn't necessarily mean that the alternatives are bad.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure he would have made a move that probably would have made sense, because it looked like through most of the draft, he really did address positions of need. I'm sure it wouldn't have been horrible, but yeah, you do start getting locked in on a guy, and Denzel Mims was one. Like when you see him there, you just, you know, your mouth starts watering, because that wide receiver is going to be potentially really big for this Jets offense.
All right, now everybody's got a take on the Ashton Davis pick. What's yours?
I think he's really interesting. I think that, you know, you don't expect a ton from a rookie year one. I think that he could potentially be the special teamer that can keep up with Braden Mann's leg. I think that he was probably scheduled to run about a 4.28 or between a 4.28 and a 4.38 in the pro day. He didn't end up running, but he's fast. He tackles pretty well. He's definitely raw in some areas, but one of those pieces, I mean, we've kept a guy like Rontez Miles around for years. We've always had guys like Terrence Brooks on the roster, Doug Middleton, you name it. That third safety does play. I think Ashton Davis right away can fill in a role like that, do some special teams, and if one day he develops and you can move on from a contract of Jamal Adams or Marcus May, it just gives you flexibility. And, you know, I like the kid's personality a ton overall, so I think that it is a good pick.
Yeah, and especially the fact that he went from walk-on to day two draft pick in the span of a couple of years. That's pretty amazing. And, you know, the other thing I noticed, and I kind of stumbled upon this when I was researching an article, is that Brian Poole was kind of like a safety slot corner hybrid last year. So even in like Greg Williams defense, you could make an argument that it's really kind of a three safety defense the way the Jets ran it last year anyway. So maybe he'd slides in there.
Yeah, that would be really interesting to see if he could do that and give you some more flexibility, because that nickel position has been, you know, emphasized in the NFL recently. And we're lucky to have Brian Poole, but he's on a 1 year deal, and there's going to be some opportunities next year to potentially fill in that role.
Yeah, and like when I go back to my thing about never expect a lot out of rookies, now you have a year where Davis can kind of get himself acclimated to the NFL, and then maybe year two step into a bigger role, maybe year one play special teams, see some time, some dime packages, and then take on a bigger role next season. So I think you may have given this away a little bit, Dan, but is there a move out there you still want to see the Jets make between now and the start of the season?
Well, the backup quarterback for sure, but now it's kind of an interesting situation because James Morgan's going to be on the roster, and you know, you're going to be bringing in three quarterbacks, or how are they going to handle that? I think that for me, it's not a position that I'm overly crazy about in the you know, the edge rusher that a lot of people are obsessed with, but I do think that it's definitely a position of need for the Jets right now. Going in there with, you know, some of these guys, Terrell Basham, a solid player. Jordan Jenkins has been, you know, good for the Jets for a long time, but we don't have a rotational piece that can kind of go in there and just go after the quarterback. And I think a guy like Marcus Golden, who's available still, would be a lot cheaper than Jadeveon Clowney. He wouldn't bring all the publicity and the noise to it. And he could just get in there, rotational downs, see if he can get after the quarterback. And, you know, he posted a career high, I think like 10 sacks last year. If he can get even 6-7. It's just a position that I think the Jets desperately need, because ideally for me, you're looking at 40 sacks or so as a club, and last year they fell pretty short of that, and they haven't done a ton to address it. It might be nice to see someone like that brought in.
That's an interesting name. I have not heard people mention that name that frequently, but that's a very logical choice, especially because, as you said, he's not going to cost the amount of money a Jadeveon Clowney is, or probably even like an Everson Griffin. So that's a very good name to bring up. Let me ask you, heading looking to the season, what are your expectations for 2020, Dan?
I'm always optimistic, so I'll say it's going to be pretty good. I think that the AFC East is wide open. You've got another playoff team. There's plenty of reasons just to think that the Jets can be competitive in the AFC East. And sure, the schedule is hard, but we're all playing the same thing. And if the stars align, you got a lot of coin flip players. You know, Joe Douglas didn't get a lot of guys locked in for 3-4 year deals, but he got a lot of 1 year guys that, you know, hit or miss. Maybe George Fant's good. Maybe he's an issue. Maybe Greg Van Roten or Alex Lewis are good. Maybe they're an issue, but you flip the coin. And if enough land the right way, you know, the stars align, we stay healthy, unlike last year. I do think that we could be potentially fighting for the division and definitely in that wild card mix at the end. How do you feel about this team?
Yeah, I mean, I think they should be. And I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago, is the thing that's different about the AFC East this year opposed to other years is this could be like a 9-10 win division champion this year. Whereas in the past, when you've had Brady in the division, you knew you were always going to need 13-14 wins to take the title. So it's just so different this year. Who do you think is the biggest competition in the division?
I think, you know, the Bills are the team that's built top to bottom. You can kind of see them being a playoff team. You saw it last year. It's hard to trust the Patriots right now with the quarterback situation they have. I'd be shocked if they didn't add somebody, but looking at Jets fans saw Jarrett Stidham for, what, 3 snaps last year? And it went pretty well for us when Jamal Adams got a pick 6. I think that, you know, there's not a ton to be afraid of. And I think that's what's kind of interesting about this whole thing is so many years, you know, you don't want to give the Patriots a ton of credit because they're the, you know, the evil enemy. But so many years you go into the season thinking like, this thing's kind of all lost. Let's go for a wild card spot. Who are we competing with in the wild card race? Right now, there's really no fear. It's kind of just go out there and win as many games as you can. And you actually truly can win the division. And I think it's exciting. I'm not too afraid of any one of them right now. I do think that you could make an argument that any one of them is ahead of the Jets. But I think you can make the same argument for the Jets as well. It really, truly is great parity in the AFC East.
And that's a welcome change. Dan, thanks so much for stopping by today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me, and I appreciate everything you do on this podcast and on Gangrene Nation.
That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you like the show, subscribe to it, and please leave it a good review. Hope you have a great weekend, everybody. We're going to be off Monday, but we will be back on Tuesday to talk more Jets.